Tfilas Kelim is a fascinating thing. You saw the Gemara tells us it's sourced in the Parsha in Matos. Sukkim there are talking about how to deal with the aftermath of the very successful war the Jewish army had against Midian. They'd been militarily successful. They'd come back with a tremendous amount of booty. And the Pesukim talk about different dinim, about how you're supposed to handle everyone and everything that came back from war. We have a couple of Pesukim that focus in particular on what do you do with the metal kelim. Achas azav is hakesef is hanechoshes. The gold, the silver, the copper, the Pasuk says, the tin, the iron, the lead. The Pasuk lists six different metals. So if you have metal items, so Asher Yavo Ba'esh, if it's gone through fire, Tavir Ba'esh has to be put through fire again, V'Taher. And then it is Tahar. Ach B'mei Nida Yishata. Ach, that context might mean however. However, it has to be Mischate, has to be cleansed with Mei Nida. So we saw it now. So that's the Gemara quotes a Braisa, the Gemara quotes a Medrash on Ayin Beis. It says, you look at that Pasuk, what does that mean? What does that mean? The Gemara quotes, as a matter of fact, two comments about those Pesukim. The Gemara quotes, Bar Kapara quoted a Medrash that when Medrash wonders how do you translate the term, that mysterious term, Mei Nida. So we hear that right away, think of a woman who is a Nida. The truth is the word Mei Nida would typically mean Mei Haza'a. And the Dalet may be like the Dalet in Aramaic, often corresponds to Zion in Hebrew. Mei Nida means the sprinkling water. That's what the Braisa has a Havamina. So it sounds like that's a reference to Hazar Shlishi Shvi. It's a reference to using Mei Par Aduma to sprinkle on the third and seventh day on these Kalim in order to remove any Tumas Mace from these Kalim. After all, they just came back from a battlefield. And the people were Tumei Mace and the Kalim were Tumei Mace. Pasuk says you're going to have to Taviru Be'esh, but also the Mei Bimechate. Bimatar with Mei Nida sounds like that means Hazar Shlishi Yishvi. But then the Braisa says, well, what do you do with the word Ach? What do you do with the word Ach? Why does it say the end? Do two things. Taviru Be'esh, which presumably means the Kashrut, and we'll get back to that soon. Kashrut and Bimatar, remove the Tumas Meis. If you have pots and pans that the Nachum use that have absorbed trefa, the bliya, absorbed the flavor trefa food. So you're going to have to kasher, you have to do libun in order to remove or incinerate the trefa flavor. Plus, you're going to have to remove the tumah. The two statuses that have to be removed, one with kashering and one with paraduma. The Gemara says, but then it's odd, the term ach is awkward. Should be in ubemenida yizchata, A and B. Why the ach? Why the disjunction? The Braisa says, apparently this is ach is a miut. We're not talking anything so dramatic as actually Shishi. We're talking about a different type of, a less dramatic type of mei nida. How else could you define the term mei nida? Well, mei nida could be referenced not to Hazah, but to the water of a woman who is a nida. A woman who is a nida goes to mikvah. That's how she becomes tahora. That's psukim in Chumash Vayikra. So this is a reference to the fact that these kalim need to be put through the mikveh as well. Now, if you look at the Rishonim on those psukim, so they point out, many Rishonim point out, Rashi, Ramban, Ibn Ezra, Rashba, Ramban points it to Unklus, the Pshuto Shal Mikra, it is referring to may need, it does mean Azos Shlishi Shvi, it does mean Pardon, that is Pshuto Shal Mikra. Which is fascinating. If you plug the what the Pashtunim point out in Chumash back into this Medrash that the Gemara is quoting, there's a nuance to be appreciated here, which is this isn't Havamina Maskana. We were in Doche. It's in Bryce, it sounds like it's a Dechia. I would have thought it means Parduma. No, but I can't because of Acha. Instead, it means Mikvah. What you see from those Rishonim is what the Bryce is doing is more subtle. It's saying, I might have thought that all it means is made paraduma. Shul Shal Mikra is paraduma. Vizehu. So the Gemara says, no, but that is the way that you just show them are reading this bright, this medrash, that is true, but there's an additional layer, an additional level of meaning. There's Emek Yosef de Pshuto, but there's drash as well. So the fact that the Torah is talking about Mei Paraduma, but the fact that the Torah presented Paraduma in an awkward way with the word Ach, when it could have used Vav, so that indicates there's an additional layer of meaning, an additional layer of interpretation as well. Al Derech Drash, it's a reference to this additional din of Tvilas Kalim, which does not remove Tumah. After all, if it's on the one hand, on the other hand, Tvilas Kalim, if the Kli is Tameh Meis, Tvila alone will not remove any Tumah. You would have to precede the Tvila with Hazar Shlishi Shvi with Mei Paraduma in order to be Metaret. So the mitzvah of Tvilas Kalim we're talking about here, on the one hand, Tvilas Kalim may sometimes be insufficient to achieve Tahara, it'll be Tameh even after the Tvilas Kalim. On the other hand, it sometimes may be unnecessary. Let's say the Kli is Tahar. The Kli may be Tahar, and there's still a requirement of Tvilas Kalim. I have a Chiyav to be Tahar with the Kalim, and we're going to begin to dig into the details. I buy the Kli Suda from an Achri, so I have to be Tovel it before I can use it. So that's nothing to do with Tumah V'Tahara, a separate din. Now, this understanding the nuance that the Rishon HaChumash are adding to our appreciation of the Medrash that the Gemara quotes on Avodah Zarah and Beis is significant for the question that Rishonim raised that you began to take a look at in Seder this week, which is the Tvilas Kalim D'Oraisa D'Rabbanan. One of the opening questions you ask when you begin to study a new area of Halacha is D'Oraisa D'Rabbanan. Well, Pashup Shad, I should say, D'Oraisa, Psukim HaChumash. As a matter of fact, the Gemara had two connections, and it should be noted some Rishonim quote the other connection. Right? We were just focusing on the Tani Bar Kapara, on the Medrash, the Brisa that Bar Kapara quoted. The Gemara, the line before, had already quoted another diuk in the pasuk. Rava said, There's another level of being matar this kli apart from the kasher. Tavir be'esh, you put it through fire. You have the spit or the grill, the frying pan you got for the nachris. So you're gonna have to be malabin. You have to put it through fire to eliminate any treif of blias. Vitaher and be matar in a different way as well. You already have in the Gemara two different indicators. You may have noticed that Rashi quotes Vitaher, Rambam quotes Vitaher. Some of the Mepharshim say, well, why Vitaher? Why not Achmein and Nida Yizchata? Just as the Gemara has both. And either it's a machlokas, okay, the Drashim Chalukim, or one is building off of the other. In other words, it may well be that Vitaher indicates that there's a need for another type of tahara, but what is that tahara? The tahara may be the mucker for the basic din, but there's a chiv to the tahara in some way, but in what way? So, b'meini da yizchata, once I figure out that meini da doesn't mean, or doesn't only mean, mei para aduma, but it means, or it also means, mayim shaniya tavelos behem, so now I know that the tahara, the details of the tahara are the meini da yizchata. The details of that tahara is to be tovel in the mikveh. That is a possibility, and that would explain why, for instance, the Rambam quotes v'toher, because that may be either it's a machlokas, and he's quoting that one, or perhaps there may be other possibilities as well, but another possibility is they work in tandem. V'toher is the basic din, but Meida Yizchata is giving me the details, the Rambam is quoting. The basic din comes from v'toher. Now, but the reason why, again, the nuance here of appreciating there's the interplay of Pshat and Drash is important is in part for the following reason. So as we started to say before, there is a question of whether Tvilas Kalim is the Reis Rabbanan, which at first sounds like the sort of question that you should raise and immediately answer, absolutely, Daraisa. Gemara is quoting multiple indications in the Pasuk that there's such a din. That's what Daraisa means. It comes from the Pasuk. It comes from the Pasuk. It's not a takan drabana, not a din that Chazal created. It's a din that that's rooted in the psukim. So how do you even? But there is such a machlokas. Right? And it begins on the page. Right? Tosis. That's not what Tosis is driving at. Tosis doesn't talk about something else. Tosis Masal Mayim begins to talk about, well, how much of a mikveh do I need min haTorah? How much of a mikveh do I need min haTorah? So sounds like there certainly is a concept of tfilas kelim deoraisa. And as you saw, there's an interesting discussion about where the Ramban stands. Ramban haTorah raises the question: is it the Raisa, is it the Rabban? And he seems to tilt towards saying it's Rabbanan, but the Ritva in the Chidushim on our Amud quotes the Ramban, who was his Rebbe's Rebbe, because Ritva was a Talmud of both the Rajba and the Ra'a, who were in turn Talmidim of the Ramban. So he quotes that the Ramban seems to have, at least at some point, it could be the Ramban changes his mind over time, or maybe Ramban Torah, he's talking about different possibilities, but it sounds like Ramban Torah sounds like he's tilting towards saying it's Ramban, but Ritva quotes the B'Shem the Ramban that it's Daraisim. And then you saw that the Lechem Mishnah points at the Machlokas Rajba and Ramban, and you saw the Ritva gets involved as well. What does the Rambam think? Where does the Rambam stand? Now, so that's interesting. Where does the Rambam stand? So you open up a Rambam, and at first glance, it's hard to say otherwise, right? Rambam says, well, it's only Divrei Sofrim. If you have a Rambam, borrow that for a moment. All right, thank you so much. The very end of Machlokas Asuras and Perek Yud Zayin Halacha Hey. The Rambam writes, Machlokas Asuras Perek Yud Zayin Halacha Hey. He begins the Perek Yud Zayin by talking about Kasher and Kalim, and then Halacha Gimel, he begins to talk about Tovling as well, and he intermingles the Dinim a little bit, because they are often intertwined. They're separate processes, but they often practically present together very often. If I get a Kli from a Nachri, if it's used, I will have to do both Kasher and Tovel. So Halacha Hey, Rambam writes, Tfil Zuh Shemat Bilin Klei HaSeudah L'Kachim and Agayim V'Yachakach Yutru L'Achilu Shtiyah. This Tvila, that you tovel clay soup, if I buy clay soup from the non-Jew, I have to tovel it, and only afterwards is it permitted to be used for eating and drinking. That's quite a definition. It's not... This is not for tumah v'tara. Instead, this is mi divrei sofrim. And remez is kodav ha-shev ha-ish tavireish v'taher. And he goes on to explain, as we were talking about before, this tefillah is neither for removing tumah, nor is this tefillah for the purpose of removing the treifa flavor that's absorbed. This is an independent, I said it's an independent mitzvah. I do this tefillah, then I'm allowed to use the kalim for eating or drinking. So what does that mean? It's midivrei sofrim, remez, mipi hashmua. So we show in the day, the Rajba, Ritva, Ramban, or Rajba, Ritva, excuse me, in the Ran, well, what's the Ram saying? So the Divrei Sofrim to our ears sounds like it's right, Rabbanan. I'm saying it's only the Divrei Sofrim. So that, the truth is that the main conversation about what the Ram means when he uses the term Divrei Sofrim is not here, but the beginning of Hilchas Isha. Those who have learned Kiddushin Begin, no doubt, have come across a lot, beginning with contemporaries of the Rambam and the Rambam's son. Rabbi Avraham ben Rambam has a tshuva about. The Rambam has a line where he says that the Mishnah says that there are three kinyanim that can work to affect Kiddushin. The Rambam says that Kiddusha Kesev, which is what we have universally practiced for the last 1,000 years or more, Kiddusha Kesev is midivrei sofrim. So that led some to understand or to misunderstand. The Rambam was saying that if you get married with Kesef, with Tabas, let's say, Shava Kesef, that you're only married midrabanan, that you're still single min haTorah. There is such a... Rashi in Ksubas quotes that he had Rebbeim who believed that Kiddusha Kesef only Rabbanan. But there were those who alleged that the Rambam said that also, because they said Kiddush HaKes was only Midrabam. It's only, excuse me, he didn't say Midrabam though. He said Midivrei Sofer, from the words of the Sofer, from the words of the Chacham. We have a letter which Rav Shalat reprinted from the Rambam himself on this topic. And the Kes, the Magen Mishnah, Kes Mishnah quote copiously about this, that it seems pretty clear that the Rambam in fact holds that Kiddush HaKesef is Daraisa. Kiddush HaKesef is Daraisa. It's sort of the dominant approach to understanding the Rambam. Kiddush HaKesef is Daraisa, but it's not Torah Shebichzav. It's Torah Shebapeh. It's a drasha from the Psukim. And when the Rambam uses the term Midivrei Sofrim, it doesn't necessarily mean Midrabanan. Often he will use it to mean Drabanan, but it really means more broadly Torah Shebapeh. Torah Shebapeh includes all the Drabanans, as well as many Daraisas. And just to explain, in other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai over the course of the 40 years in Midbar, he conveyed to him, as the Rambam discusses extensively in a number of places in his writings, Mishnah Torah and elsewhere, HaKadosh Baruch Hu conveyed to Moshe Rabbeinu the entire text of Torah Shebichzav, the entire text of Chamisha Chumshei Torah, as well as significant chunks of Torah Shebapeh, both in terms of content, interpretations of many parts of Chumash, and independent dinim, halachos Moshe Sinai, as well as methodology. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu that I gave you this Chumash, and this text of Chumash, I'm HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm omnipotent, I can do as I please, so I have the capacity, and I did, in fact, give you, write a text that has many, many layers of meaning. And there are multiple, in addition to Pshuto Shel Mikra, there are multiple additional layers of meaning embedded within this text. I gave you some of them already, up front, and I'm giving you the tools to mine the text of Chumash for those to discover those other embedded layers of meaning. And those tools are the Yigil Mi'eshat Torah and Drash Aspect. So when Chachmei HaTorah Shebechol Dar use the Midos to discover Kavanas HaBore that's embedded in the Chumash, that's a Din Daraisa, which is Torah Shebapeh. That's drasha. When Chachmei HaTorah use their capacity to invent new dinim, that's what we call drabam. Ner Chanukah was something that Chazal invented. They have the capacity with a limited authority to invent dinim. That's what we call din drabanan. They didn't say, oh, you see from this pasuk that Kadosh Baruch Hu was telling Moshe Rabbeinu, Kadosh Baruch Hu was telling us you have light ner Chanukah. No, it may be a reflection of certain Daraisa ideals, but the requirement, the obligation to light Neres Chanukah is Drabanan. Whereas the obligation to fulfill a din, which is rooted in interpreting the Chumash, that's Daraisa. Torah Shebapeh, Daraisa. But both Rambam, it seems that the Rambam referred to both of those areas as Divrei Sofer. Whether it's something that Chazal discovered or something that Chazal invented. Whether it's Daraisa or Drabanan, either way, those are Torah Shebapeh, and he'll refer to them as Divrei Sofer. That explains why, for instance, you might say, how could it be that the Rambam holds it's Daraisa? If it's Daraisa, why isn't one of the Tariq mitzvahs? Now you look at the beginning of Hilchos Machalos Asuras, he lists all the many mitzvahs that comprise Machalos Asuras. Tefilas Kelim was not there. So, well, if it's Drabanan, rule number one, the Rambam has 14 rules. He gives different mitzvahs to figure out what qualifies as a mitzvah. Rule number one is it has to be Daraisa. So if it's Rabbanan, then clearly it's not on the list. The Rambam is quite vociferous about not counting Chanukah, Neres Chanukah, or Mikra Megillah, so forth, because they're all Rabbanan. And they're therefore in violation of his criterion number one. Criterion number two is that a mitzvah means that it's Torah Shebichzav. So if it's Torah Shebapeh, it won't, even though it's Daraisa, it won't qualify as a mitzvah. Clearly there many more. The Gemara at the end of Makkah tells us there are 613 mitzvahs. There are many, many more than 613 dinim. Clearly not every din is a mitzvah. So Ram says we have to figure out the guidelines, the criteria to determine which din is a mitzvah. Number one has to be Daraisa. Number two has to be Torah Shebichzav. So even if he holds that Tefilas Kelim is Daraisa, but it's Midivrei Sofrim, and therefore it's not a mitzvah. It's a halacha, which is binding, either min ha-Torah or min drabanan, but it's not a mitzvah. And what do you mean is Midivrei Sofrim? But it's Psukim in the Chumash. And that's why what we said before, it's critically important. What those Pashtun are pointing out is that the Gemara, the Braisa that that Bar Kappara quoted, it wasn't a rejection of saying that possibly referring to Paraduma. We accept that Sar Paraduma, that Pshut Lashon Mikra, but we're saying, but the term Ach indicates there's another layer here as well, which is the Mei Nida in the additional sense of Tfilas Kelim. So it may well be Daraisa, but it's a Drasha, it's not Pshut Lashon Mikra. So once you use the that Rishonim give us to read this medrash in a nuanced way, so then you understand how one could say like the Rashba, the Avad Rama holds that Tfilas Kelim is Daraisa, but it's just Tarshu Al Peh. Tarshu Al Peh therefore refers to as Divrei Sofrim, even though it's Daraisa. Tarshu Al Peh therefore he doesn't count as a mitzvah, even though it's Daraisa. Yeah, Lamainaf Kamina, that we're going to get to. Lamainaf Kamina, why does it matter whether it's Daraisa or Rabbanon? Either way, Orthodox Jews keep Rabbanon with the same passion and vigor that we fulfill Daraisas. We make a bracha, both on Daraisas and Rabbanon. So the major Naf Kamina is always a suffix, and that is coming up later on this Amud. You saw that the Gemara later on has an open suffix, Lahalacha, in the issue of Mashkon. So how you paskin on that teku will probably be driven by whether you hold that Tfilas Kelim is Daraisa or Drabanan. Should we be using the rule of Safek Daraisa L'Chumra or Safek Drabanan L'Kula? It is fascinating also, I'm not sure if it's substantively fascinating or just poetically fascinating, that this kashem that there is a question to what extent does Tfilas Kelim appear in the Psukim? Does it or doesn't it? Are these drashas, gemuras min haTorah, or are these just smachtos? And really, it's only a din drabanan. It's a little bit reflected in the Mishnah, because there is into the way that the Mishnah is written. Because there is a debate in the Rishonim how to read the Mishnah. Did the Mishnah talk about Tfilas Kelim? Did the Mishnah talk about Tfilas Kelim? Now, the Mishnah talks about Yatpil, Yagil, Yolabim, right? And then the Gemara immediately quotes a Braisa, Tana, a Braisa that comments the Mishnah, but they all need Tfilah Barabam Sa'at. So what was that Yatpil before? So Rashi on the Mishnah made it sound like Yatbil means Tevilah. Tevilah is Kelim. But some Rishonim understand that means to rinse it, to clean the surface. If you have something that you get a type of kli from a Nachri that would not normally be used in heat at all, fruit bowl, let's say, so you can use it for your food. You just have to scrub. You don't have to kosher in any way. No, you don't have to remove any absorbed flavor because we have no reason to believe there is any absorbed flavor. Because if you just put cold tarfas on a plate, it doesn't absorb flavor into the interior of the kli, but there may still be a tray for residue on the surface that needs to just be clean, not koshered, just cleaned off. So that's a question. What does yatbil mean? Does yatbil mean clean? Yatbil mean tovel, which would then explain. If it doesn't mean tovel, then you understand that then the Mishnah didn't talk tefillah at all. And then the Braisa is saying, by the way, there's also a din of tefillah. Rashi didn't learn the Mishnah that way. Rashi learned that the Yatbil is talking about tefillah, which he seems to indicate on the Mishnah itself. And the first Rashi in the Gemara, the Chula, he says, Af ha-negovel mu'banim. You shouldn't think you only have to tovel if you don't kasher. No, no, they all need tefillah. If you're kasher, you have to tovel and kasher. So that's sort of at least poetic. That kashem that there's a question whether Tfilas Kelim appears in the Chumash is also a question whether Tfilas Kelim appears in the Mishnah. It clearly is a din. So let's just review, let's just recap, and then we'll begin to get into some of the halachah ma'isim as well. But let's just recap what we have. There definitely are, when I get a kli from an achri, there may be up to three different processes that it needs to undergo in order to be ready for halachically ready for use. Three different processes, three different issues. Number one, the kli may be tameh, which bizman hazeh, unfortunately, we don't have access to truma or kachem, So we don't really bother very much with whether something is tamei or tahar. But meheri bana beis hamikdash, we should once again be concerned with tumah v'tahara. So I'm not mechuyev. When the Torah says achum ein da yischatad sent the paradigma, you're not mechuyev to have all your kelim be tahorim. As a matter of fact, everyone had, and the Gemara Ksubas tells us that just as an analog, as we think it to us, we think it's a davar pashtei. In an observant home, you're going to have milchik dishes and fleishik dishes, unless you're one of those rare families that only eats milchiks or only eats fleishiks. I know some of both. But there are an observant family will have milchik dishes and fleishik dishes. So the Gemara Ksubas tells us an observant woman once upon a time would have tahar clothes and tamei clothes. She had two separate wardrobes. Part of the month she's tamei, part of the month she's tahora. So if you can afford to have multiple wardrobes, instead of taking your entire wardrobe to mikveh, every time the woman goes to mikveh at the end of her nidus, she would have two separate wardrobes. So to us it sounds foreign, but to them it was like milchus and fleishiks. You have two sets. So if when we'll be zocha once again to live under... In situations where we're concerned, we're sensitive to v'tahara. So if you get a kli from an achri, if you want to use it with dvarim tahorim, you're going to want to make sure it's tahar. If there's a concern of tumas meis, it needs hazar shlishi shvi. No concern of tumas meis, they just need the tefillah b'mikvah. Tefillah b'mikvah for purpose of tahar. Okay, but that is unfortunately has not been relevant for us for almost 2,000 years. Then there's a second issue which the psukim do address directly, and that's going to come back in a moment. And that is that this may be one of the places where the Torah indicates that not only is a Jew not allowed to eat actual items which are non-kosher. Now, the Torah gives me a list of 10, 15, 20, 25 different machalas asuras. I can't eat basa b'chalav, I can't eat arla, and I can't eat nevela, and so on and so forth. And then there is a chiddush, which is probably daraisa, a ta'am ke'ikr. Not only can I actually eat a piece of pork, but if I put pork into the challenge, I can't even eat the potatoes. What's wrong with eating the potatoes? That's not basar behem tamea. It's not a piece of meat at all. It's a potato. So the answer is yes. I'm not in violation of the law of eating basar behem tamea, but I am in violation of the din, deraisa drabana, and probably deraisa of tam keiker. That the flavor is like the thing itself. If I can't eat the actual food, I can't eat a slice of ham, then I also cannot eat potato that has a ham flavor. Here, in Matos, the Torah is taking this to the next step. Not only cannot eat a food item that directly absorbs flavor from tarfus, I can't even eat a food item that had been cooked in equipment that had previously been used for tarfus. So even two steps removed, is it called cliche, at Tom Shaney, that's also... That is also problematic. That's what the Torah tells me, that if it was used in fire, if it absorbed the flavor, if I have a frying pan or a spit or a grill that absorbs the flavor in dry heat, and it was bother esh, then tavir esh. The only way to eliminate that flavor is putting it through direct heat again, putting it through a libum. And then the Torah says, but if it only went through water, so then all I need to do is hagal. That's sufficient. If it's a pot where the flavor, there was a liquid medium through which the flavor of whatever the tarfus was absorbed into the pot, so then you don't have to put it into a much higher dry heat of libun. It's enough to put it into boiling hot water, which obviously is going to limit, going to top out at 212. So that's what we call libun and hagalah. And perhaps, the end of the... end of the year, maybe we'll see how time goes. Maybe we'll come back. That's Siman Kuf Chafalf, halachas of Hagal and Liban. That's not our focus right now. Then finally, number three is even, as the Gemara tells us, even if there's no problem of absorption of trefa flavor, and even if either the item is already tar or it's tamei, but it doesn't matter to me, and if I don't have paraduma ward, I may not even be able to affect tahara. Independently, there is a din, again, either daraisa or drabanan, that I have to tovel the kli before I use it. As Rambam said, in order to allow me to eat and drink using that kli, it needs to first go to mikveh. Now that raises a question of what exactly is this? So it's not removing tumah v'tahara. It's not removing tumah, excuse me. It's not removing tarfus. So it's not a tumah issue. It's not a machalas asuras issue. So what is it? Either there isn't a concern of tumah, I have to totally, even when there is no concern of tumah or machalas asuras, And conversely, when there are either or both those concerns, this tefillah may not be sufficient to solve them. If I have a used kli from an achri, taken to mikveh doesn't solve my problems. Right? It's a gemara at the end of the amud. You got a fur, you kasher, and then you tovel. Two separate processes. That's what Rashi said, we just saw, was the first line of the gemara. Even though you're going to kasher, you're going to liban, in addition, you have to tovel. So what is it? So that's what you may have seen on the page of the tour, Beis Yosef, Darkei Moshe, quote, Rabbeinu Yonah, ultimately going back to the Rishalmi, very, very intriguing Rishalmi, the very beginning. First paragraph in the Beis Yosef. He quotes Yerushalmi that it's a tevila to shikeshiyetimi to maso shal god lekdushaso shal Yisrael. It's a tevila that's going to move it from being a non-Jewish kli to being a Jewish kli. So Rabbi Shechter presents it is the following. Usually we think about tevila as a tevila hamitaharis. So usually think about tevila as removing a status. You have a person who's Tameh, a man or a woman who's Tameh, you have a Kli which is Tameh, go to Mikvah, you'll no longer be Tameh, now you'll be Tahar. Tahar in the sense of not Tameh. But there are situations where you find Tevila that's required, Minat Torah, where there's no Tumah being removed. The most obvious example is Yikangal B'Yom Kippur. Yikangal B'Yom Kippur goes to Mikvah 5 times. Why? He's not Tameh. He's just spent the first Mishnah Yuma tells he spent the last week ensuring that he is Tahar. And as the Mishnahs go on to say, if he becomes Tameh on Yom Kippur, he can go to Mikvah, but he'll still be a Tvul Yom until Yom Kippur is over. So if he becomes Tameh, going to Mikvah isn't going to help him. As soon as he becomes Tameh, yeah, go to Mikvah, but then we're still going to have to bring in reserves. We're still going to have to bring in the backup Kohen Gadol. So what's he going to do? He's going to do 5 times. Why? What? What is that? Or a Nachri. And Nachri wants to be Mizgar and become a Jew. So part of the system, Gemara in Bukharos, he has to go to Mikvah. What's he going to Mikvah for? Because he was Tameh, he wasn't Tameh. Midrabanan, there's a notion of Tumah by Nachri. But the truth is, Min HaTorah, there is no notion, the whole notion of Tumah on a human being exists in the Torah only by Jews. He could not have been Tameh beforehand in the Torah. So why is he going to Mikvah? The answer is, it's not being Metahir him. And the Kohen Gadol isn't becoming Tahar. Apparently, he is Tahar already. There's no Tumah being removed. It's a Tosefes Kedusha. It's not Tevila HaMetaheres, it's Tevila HaMekadeshes. It's not to remove a negative status, it's to add, to endow a positive status, to inject Kedusha. To inject Kedusha is a straw to this human being who formerly was non-Jewish, to add to the Kedusha of the Kohen Gadol, to enable him to enter, perhaps to enable him to enter Kosh HaKedoshim. And Gemara in second paragraph Zvachim talks about a Kohen can enhance, add his Kedushas to his Kedushas Kuhuna by wearing Big Day Kuhuna. So this may be some of the similar, analogous type of idea. That's a Tzvila Mekadeshas, adding to his Kedusha. So what the Yerushalmi is saying is very fascinating, that it's like a Geirus on the Kalim. You're going to add Kedushas to Israel. Kli isn't Tameh, or it is Tameh, whatever. This Tzvila is not necessarily going to remove Tumah. And this field is not removing tarfas. But it is endowing the canon with Kedusha, which in terms of the philosophy of the halacha, in terms of the nachshava behind these dinams, that's very fascinating. Because we presume what it speaks to, you think about it, it's a radical, thematically radical idea. I have to convert my pots and pans. It sounds like people joke about, you know, a family that has a pet, like the pet's Jewish. That's obviously absurd. And not getting involved with it, having pets, not having pets, right? But even if a Jewish family chose for better for us to have a pet, the pet is not Jewish. That goes without saying. But every Jewish family has Jewish pots and pans, in some sense. It's a gerus on the kalim. It's like a remarkable idea. There's more to say about it. Maybe at some other point we can expand on it more. But it presumably speaks to the fact that we see eating and engagement with gashmis in general, and eating in particular, as prime opportunities for Kedusha. As a matter of fact, that Rambam Sefer Kedusha you have in front of you, the contents of that Sefer are remarkable. Because if I told you Rambam divides all of Targum Mitzvahs into 14 Svarim, and one of those 14 Svarim is the Book of Kedusha, If you were wondering what's inside, maybe you would guess Karbanos, Beis HaMikdash, Sefer Tar Tefillin Mezuzah. What's holy? Remarkably, the only items in Sefer Kedusha are halachas that govern food and intimacy. A remarkable reality. But it speaks to the fact that Jews proudly believe, unlike surrounding cultures, both secular and religious, that divine discipline in the way in which we engage in physical pleasure which we share not only with all of humanity, but with the entire animal kingdom, but divine discipline in the way in which we engage in physical pleasure is one of the great, not the only, but one of the great paths to Kedusha. And it's absolutely appropriate, it is absolutely appropriate, that Hilchos Machalos Asuros and Isurei Bia, Shechita, obviously goes aligned with Machalos Asuros, should be the contents of Sefer Kedusha. And that concept is presumably being highlighted and reinforced by the fact that what you're going to eat your breakfast, lunch, and supper with, what you're going to make your breakfast, lunch, and supper with, is going to require, you have to make it Jewish first. You know, totally, we don't tovel food. We never tovel food. And don't tovel food for tahor either. Food becomes tummy. It's not mitan l'tvila. But the kalim that you use for your food, you have to become Jewish first. You're going to eat Jewishly. We will neither say, you know, eating is fundamentally, physical pleasure is fundamentally non-religious, nor do we say, eat however you want, it's all the same. We say, you should eat, and you should eat Jewishly. And that idea is being reinforced by this din. And with that in mind, we have 2-3 minutes left. With that, let's at least begin to get some of the holy nitty-gritty of the halacha maaseh here. And with that in mind, that the Gemara gives 3 conditions. Not every kli requires tefillah. And one of the 3 conditions is, Gemara tells us, the first condition is it has to be clay suuda. It has to be clay suuda, it has to be metal, and it has to have been lakuach min hagoy. And the 3 conditions have to do with function, material, and history. The function of the kli has to be clay suuda. The material has to be, Torah tells, gives a list of 6 metals. Midrabanan, it applies not only to metal, but to glass as well. But not, if you have clay suuda which are made out of wood or rubber or ceramic or stone, those do not require tefillah. And finally, even if it's the right function, the right material, it also has to have the right history. It has to formerly have belonged to a non-Jew and presently belong to a Jew. And as I mentioned on Monday, when we were getting started with this limud, the halachos of tefillos kelim are going to fall into 2 major categories. We're going to be looking first at which kelim are chayav in tefillah, which is primarily, not exclusively, but primarily digging into each of these 3 conditions, to dig into how you define klei suda, and what do you mean by matadeis, what's talking about, what do you mean by mataches and or zechuches. And there's plenty to say. The Gemara gets involved in some of the details of how you define the criterion of ownership history, that it used to at some point belong to a non-Jew and presently belongs to a Jew. So that's the first section. So we'll be looking at those se'ifim, a little bit of Sif Aleph, and then see from Dal through Yud Aleph. And then we're going to circle back to the other major area in Hilchos Tefillos Kelim, which is, given that this kli requires tefillah, how do I the Maisa Tefillah? We look at the Chefza, and we look at the Maisa Tefillah. There's a fair amount to say about both. Maisa Tefillah will take us back first to Sif Aleph, you had a peek at, to find what type of mikvah or mayim do you need, and then how do you hold it, and chatzitza, and so on and so forth. That's sort of the second section. Just to lay out briefly, sort of sketch out, let me end by just sketching out some of the issues in Klei Seuda. Then Emir Tzashem of the Gli, which I know many of you already began to dig into the Chavrusa over the last couple of days, and will continue in the coming week. You should keep your eyes open for the following. There are a number of different questions, and it's worth, as you can learn the next few se'ifim, Dalet, Hey, Vav, Zayin, a little bit of Aleph, it's worth thinking about. They're not just a series of dinim. The Gemara and the post-Gemara are raising a series of questions in terms of how you define or how you limb they draw the parameters of clay seuda. And that most of the shalos and tefillos can have to do with clay seuda. This is where the preponderance of the action, halacha maista, is in clay seuda. The issues also in terms of materials, issues in terms of ownership history, most of the shalos are going to be in clay seuda. And there are several different questions that get raised. Sif Dalet, for instance, is the smak tells us that one condition is in terms of the degree or the type of interaction. Clay suda means this clay is interacting with food. So one question is, well, how does it interact with the food? What's the degree of interaction with the food? So the smak says you have to have direct contact. There are plenty of kelim that are necessary in the kitchen, but never actually touch the food. That's the machlokes rishonim. Is that chayav and tefillah or not? And then that actually opens up, we'll get to a blina next week, fascinating lamdusha question about the integration of different criteria. There's one major issue is the question of, do you need contact? Is how much the degree of the interaction that the kli has with the food. Another question, which is only raised by more recent poskim, is the degree of the impact that the kli makes on the food. In other words, when you say clay seuda, there's kalim that do what with food? Kalim that you prepare food with, kalim that you serve food with, kalim that you eat food, consume the food with. How about kalim that you only use for storage? Let's say you have a large glass jar with a tight seal that you store things in. You don't pickle things in them, and you don't eat out of them, and you don't bring it to the table. It's just used for storage. A vat. You have a refillable vat that you use for oil. Okay. So, I don't bring it to the table. No one's bringing it. It's a 3-gallon vat of oil to the table. It's very messy. And nor are you, you're not making the oil in that. So that's a question of what exactly is the function. Not how directly it interacts with the food, but what it does for the food. And then a third question is the question of the type of food itself. That some of you saw, that Mordechai in the beginning of Chulin raised based on the Gemara and Daf Ches. How about it's not just a question of storage, it's actually processing, it's helping to process the food, but at a very early stage. The Sakin Shashchita, the role is for the matzah, and so on and so forth. And you have to figure out what the Rishonim are saying, and then Mechal Ramad and Shach and Taz, a lot going on in terms of that question. So again, there's the degree of interaction of the food, contact versus without contact. There's the degree of the impact it has on the food. Is it actually used for preparing, serving, eating, or merely for storage? Then there's a question of the stage of the food itself during the interaction. Does it need to be ready to eat or not? And then finally, one of the issues that the Pischei Tshuva raises is the quality of the kli. Should there be rules about it, like rules for what constitutes a kli? It does a great job of interacting with the food, but it's attached to mechubar l'karka. The suda piece is there, but I brew my beer, and not get involved in whether one should or should not be drinking alcohol, leaving that aside. But once upon a time, there may have been health value to drinking beer, because to have a little bit of alcohol is probably safer than to drink water, which might not be potable, might be dangerous. So once upon a time, it was probably a very good idea to have a low alcohol drinks as opposed to zero alcohol drinks. But be that as it may, so you have a big metal vat that you're using to brew your beer, the metal vat isn't going anywhere. So it's certainly being used to make a food item, but it's mechub l'karka. So those are, over the course, it's worth over the coming week to organize the limud as you work through sif by sif to ask yourself, like, we're building a list of criteria to define what kli suda is, and that there could be items that make it that pass all the criteria and they're chayav and tefillah. There'll be items that fail one or the other. Maybe this is used as edible food, but there's no contact. This is and so on and so forth. So organize the dinim in that way, and then finally, as some of you probably will next week begin to get to Se'ifim Vav and Zion, which start to move into the territory of the next criterion, the question of materials. Metal is chai, but wood is potter. How about when it's a blend of the two? And why, I wanted to keep your eyes open for, as you look and see from Vav and Zayin, is that sounds like we've moved from criteria one to criteria two. We're done with Kli Suda, now we're talking about, you know, the material. But what you're going to see is actually a fascinating interplay. Part one, part of what the Rishonim are dealing with, and it's very relevant to Halacha Maisa, is there, are these like separate rules? Number one, Kli Suda. Number two, metal or glass. Number three, well, talk more about the definition of metal. And number three, you know, the ownership history. Or do they sort of, is there interplay between those rules? So again, if the last 3 minutes or so were a little confusing, that's totally fine, because we didn't actually say anything. All I was doing is laying out here the questions to keep your eyes open. Of course, just laying out a framework. We're going to be looking on next week at digging more into Kli Suda. Next week in the Chabura, we will go through Bli Neder, thoroughly through all the issues of Kli Suda, from Gemara Rishonim to Halacha Maisa, and hopefully come out with practical Halacha Maisa. We may even get next week already into issues of material as well.